This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Today on the broadcast, Facebook figures out mobile, how Yahoo is trying to keep up, and what happens when I go shopping for a doll. Here's a hint, you guys, it is not gonna be pretty. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday, the 24th day of July. Great, as always, to have you with us, everybody. The stock of the day today trades under the ticker symbol FB. Facebook, of course, up better than 5% at the close because when it reported earnings yesterday afternoon, well, I think the phrase you're looking for here, you guys, is blew everybody's socks right off. Yes, they are making money, and one out of every seven people on the planet does have an account. But it's the way they're making money that got everybody excited, because it wasn't all that long ago the company was getting slammed, both here and elsewhere, for not being able to do mobile. That's with air quotes, do mobile. Well, consider it done. Marketplace's Annie Baxter starts us off.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg made some remarks on an investor conference call yesterday that might go down as the understatements of the year.
This was a good quarter for us and a good end to the first half of the year.
Facebook's profits climbed to $800 million in the second quarter, more than doubling compared to the same period last year. That was due in large part to a big surge in ad revenue, nearly two-thirds of which came from its mobile ads. Those are the ads for stuff like furniture or detergent, which, like it or not, now appear as regularly as your friend's adorable baby photos in your Facebook mobile news feed. Ben Schachter is an internet analyst with Macquarie Capital, which invests in Facebook.
The mobile ads business is growing faster than anyone had anticipated. The desktop business is not declining as much as people thought.
Google still owns the mobile ad space. The search giant took in 42% of all U.S. mobile ad revenue last year, according to the research firm eMarketer. Facebook got about 16%. But Google has been losing ground, and Facebook is coming on strong.
The thing is, it's growing so fast that it's already kind of the question, when are they going to take over Google?
That's Karsten Weide with the market research firm International Data Corporation. He thinks Facebook could close in on Google in 2015. But Weide says there are some tougher questions, too, like how Facebook is going to keep up its daily user base, which didn't grow in the latest quarter, and how it plans to make money off new services like private messaging and virtual reality. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
General Motors reported quarterly profits today. They were lower than expected because recalls. We're seeing just how much those faulty ignition switches are costing him. GM says compensating victims alone will run between $400 and $600 million, maybe more. And that doesn't include repairs and all the other costs associated with big recalls like that. But bad as that sounds, and it does sound bad, GM sales somehow aren't suffering. Marketplace's Mark Garrison takes a closer look at that.
You wouldn't think GM is the company going through a recall crisis based on sales numbers.
It's amazing. General Motors would have had an outstanding quarter had it not been for all of the costs associated with the recalls.
Auto Trader senior analyst Michelle Krebs adds that recalls actually provide a sales opportunity.
A lot of these recall people are coming into the dealership and liking what they see in the showroom. They get their recall fixed, but they buy a new car.
And GM is driving sales without giving away the store, says Sean McElinden with the Center for Automotive Research.
They have not resorted to incentive campaigns to keep their sales up. Profitability on some of their newer models is very healthy.
Car industry watchers credit GM's improved PR response after early bumbling. But Paul Argenti, who teaches corporate communications at Dartmouth's business school, is not impressed.
You know, if I were grading them in my class, they'd get a low pass, which is sort of the equivalent of a D.
He wants to see the company better explain how it's going to change a culture that led to serious, deadly engineering flaws getting on the road.
What people want to know in a crisis is why it happened, but then they also want to know why that's just not going to happen again.
And that's a real leadership challenge for CEO Mary Barra. For auto analyst Marianne Keller, it's about action, not talk.
All of what she says will go for naught if a year from now it's business as usual.
And breaking decades of bad habits is a lot harder than fixing an ignition switch. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Wall Street today was a bumpy, bumpy ride, and all for naught. The major indices ended just about where they started. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've spent part of this week talking to people at the top of their fields, education, entertainment, and product design, about how they do what they do. Today, we're going to take on technology, a woman who is helping Yahoo get traction in one of the fastest-moving and most challenging industries there is. Kathy Savitt is the Chief Marketing Officer at Yahoo. Kathy, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'll be honest with you. I was trying to figure out how to start this interview, and I came up with a bunch of questions, and I threw them out, and then I came down on this one. Is Yahoo today a media company, or is it a technology company, a high-tech company?
At the end of the day, we're first and foremost a technology company that uses our technology to make the world's daily habits inspiring and entertaining. And some of the things that we do every single day are discover information, like search, for instance, or maybe communications like email. But a lot of them are also media consumption habits that we do every day. And so all of those things, we focus on those 12 to 15 things that people do most on a mobile device, a tablet, or a computer. And that's the purple thread that connects everything we do just from start to finish.
The purple thread, a spiffy bit of marketing and branding from the chief marketing officer. 12 to 15 things. Sounds like a whole lot of things for you to be concentrating about doing well each and every single day.
Well, actually, if you look at where Yahoo has been, the company had hundreds of products previously. When you reduce it all down into four buckets, it's really about search / discovery, communications, our digital magazines, which is our editorial content, and video.
You guys have plus or minus 800 million users. And so the question is, which ones of those... And you can't say all of them, because that's like saying your kids, all your kids are your favorites. But which ones of those are the most important to you? Is it the 14 to 24s? Is it the 24s to 29s? Which ones? Who really counts in there?
You know, I am, by the way, I am a mother of five girls.
There you go.
I am used to saying that I love all my children.
There you
go. I love all my children. But I think Yahoo's traditional strength was looking at men and women sort of 35 plus, especially moms. In the last year and a half to 2 years, we've made a concerted effort to expand our strengths into the 18 to 34-year-old marketplace. We are bringing a live concert 365 days a year.
But why do you think people want to watch concerts on their phones?
I think live music and live moments in general are truly the thing that dominates the water cooler right now. I'm a very patient person. I've been in digital content since 2002, and I remember people asking me, why do you think anyone would watch a video on a computer? That's ridiculous. And then 7 years later, people said, why would anyone want to watch content on a phone? I think we're at the point now where whether it's live sports, live events, or live music, that these are the truly exclusive, non-replicable moments that people are excited about. And it's a pretty extraordinary experience. And if you look at Pound Yahoo Live and look at what people are saying about the experience, they are actually now scheduling around it because it's immersive. You can connect that mobile phone to an Apple TV or Roku or another device and feel like you're truly at the concert just without the parking.
All right. Well, I'll give it a whack and we'll see how that goes. One more thing I want to ask you before I let you go. And I will tell you in advance that I have asked Meg Whitman at Hewlett-Packard this question. She couldn't get it right. I asked President Obama 2 weeks ago this question. He could not get it right. So I'm going to give you a whack at it with that setup.
Oh, no. I'm scared now.
Here, no pressure. Here we go. In five words or less, what does your company do?
In five words or less, what does her company do? I'm just counting them out.
See, that's the mistake most people make. They don't think and count. They just spew something off and it's 20 words.
No. Daily habits are inspiring, entertaining.
All right. Was that five?
Yeah, it was five. I took out the and in between inspiring and entertaining. Right. You know, I gave sort of a tweet text version. A little, you know, a little shout out to my 18 to 34 year olds, so that I could compete with our glorious president and Meg, who I respect so much.
Kathy Savitt, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Twitter is out with its latest diversity numbers. Same old is the short headline. Like Facebook and Yahoo and Google and LinkedIn, it's doing a lousy job of hiring women and people of color. And to be clear, the company knows it. Their report is titled Building a Twitter We Can Be Proud Of. So, how? Marketplace's Noel King has that story.
No one from Twitter was available for an interview, but in an email, the company pointed to a list of organizations it supports: Girls Who Code, Year Up, Black Girls Code, and others. The pipeline argument is you've got to help more women and people of color get into tech. Catherine Finney, the founder of Digital Undivided, says for people of color, networking can be a stumbling block.
Usually in tech, you get a job because your friend works there, or you know the founder, or somehow you went to the same school or were a classmate. And we're not part of those networks. We're not necessarily friends with founders of billion-dollar companies.
But people who work in tech say helping others break in is only part of the solution. Lee Honeywell, a security engineer and member of Double Union, a feminist hackerspace, says lots of women who make it through the pipeline and get jobs in tech are confronted by a culture that can be downright sexist.
I could tell you stories that would make you be like, is this Mad Men? You know, out and out sexist remarks, business dinners that I thought were business dinners that ended up being like somebody's idea of a date.
She says simply bringing diverse employees in isn't enough.
It's really not cool to be, you know, encouraging all of these young girls and young people of color to enter a field where they're going to face discrimination. It's up to those of us who are here, both men and women, to encourage attitude changes.
Honeywell says part of the solution is to gently, and sometimes less gently, call out bad behavior in the workplace. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
Coming up.
This is a girl's delight. So you can go into each one of these little shops and immerse yourself into that era.
Yeah, no. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is basically flat today, slipped 2 points, ended at 17,083. The NASDAQ also stood pretty much still, gave up a point, ended at 4,472. Yeah, let's make it three, why don't we? The S&P 500 gained less than a point, finished where it started, 19,087. Financials mustered a little bit more energy. Bank of America deposited 0.6% today. JPMorgan Chase added 0.25%. Facebook's mobile gains that we were telling you about also raised hopes for Twitter and Yahoo. Twitter ticked up 2.5%. Yahoo jumped more than 4% today. Microsoft kind of sat out the party, though. Shares off 1%. Apple also headed downhill by 0.1%. Bond prices finally budged, and when they did, they budged downward. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.50%, 2.5%. Another way to say that, you're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. Xerox releases quarterly earnings. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on durable goods orders for June. Computers fall into that category. And speaking of computers, tomorrow is System Administrator Appreciation Day. Time to thank your IT folks for preventing business from grinding to a halt every day.
I'm Michelle Phillippe. Oh, darn, I forgot my password. Guys? Guys?
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. President Obama wraps up his West Coast trip this afternoon. 3 days, a couple of policy speeches here and there, and five very big-ticket fundraisers. Super PACs, party committees, everybody is going to get a little cash out of this trip. We are now in the third federal election cycle of the Citizens United era, the 2010 Supreme Court case that said corporations can give just about as much money as they want to whomever they want. This past April, the Supreme Court decided another case, another big campaign finance case. It was called McCutcheon versus the Federal Election Commission, in which the justices overturned certain limits on how much money regular Americans can give to candidates and committees. There was some worry that the ruling would open the cash floodgates even farther, but so far, not really quite so much, as Marketplace's David Gura reports from Washington.
Gone are what are called aggregate limits on political donations.
The total amount an individual could give to candidates, parties, and other PACs.
Michael Kang teaches election law at Emory University. In the past, a donor could give a maximum of $74,600 to party committees every 2 years and $48,600 to federal candidates. A Republican donor named Sean McCutcheon challenged those, and the court's majority ruled they were unconstitutional. But Kang says, here's the thing.
The court striking down the aggregate limit probably won't affect that many givers going forward.
Because most Americans weren't already affected by them. Heather Gerken is a professor at Yale Law School.
There really weren't a lot of people bumping up against these aggregate limits. So in 2012, I think the number is roughly 650 people maxed out.
Meaning they gave as much as they could to candidates and committees. Tens of thousands of dollars. During oral arguments, the justices debated a hypothetical. With no aggregate limits, a donor could, in theory, funnel millions of dollars to a single candidate through committees. Gerken says that's plausible, but she doesn't expect it'll happen too often.
If you have enough money to give $3.5 million in one check, you probably have enough money to fund your own super PAC.
Something many big donors have done. If you have your own super PAC, you have a lot more say over how your money's spent. So who has been affected most directly by the Supreme Court's decision? Lobbyists. Kelly Bingle is one of them. She's a big supporter of candidates who are Democrats.
I think as soon as the decision came out, every lobbyist in Washington, D.C. was looking at their checkbook thinking, oh my gosh, what does this mean for me?
A lobbyist's checkbook gets a lot of use. Part of her job, Bingle says, is to give money to politicians. She plans for it every year.
This was a part of my family's budget.
Bingle pays out of pocket to go to political fundraisers, and there are a lot of them.
We could spend breakfast, lunch, and dinner with folks. And so my personal preference is to have breakfast and dinner with my family.
Bingle estimates she gets around 100 solicitations a day, mostly by email. In the past, those aggregate limits the Supreme Court overturned gave her an easy out.
I mean, it used to be you could say, I'm sorry, I've hit the max. Now you have to say, I'm sorry, I just can't. I know there isn't a max, but I can't physically, you know, write any more checks.
In my case, it was actually true.
Kenneth Keyes did bump up against those caps many times. He runs the Federal Policy Group, a big lobbying firm headquartered in D.C., and he also worried about the effect of the McCutcheon decision.
I was going to get rid of my email address and delist my phone number.
Keyes has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republican candidates and Republican Party committees. Michael Kang at Emory Law School notes one limit is still in place, a cap on how much a donor can give to a single candidate. $2,600.
I think from the standpoint of campaign finance reformers, they feel they dodged a bullet here.
But Kang says it's something the justices could address in the future.
I don't think it's too sweeping to say that the court really is on a path toward something approaching total deregulation of campaign finance.
If that limit on individual donations were to disappear, that would affect many more Americans. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
There is virtually nothing I won't do for this radio program. You guys know that, right? But today, well, I think today might just be above and beyond, so I'm going to get right to it. I went shopping not too long ago for a doll.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Today on Conversations from the Corner Office Field Recording Edition, Jean McKenzie. She is the president of American Girl. It's a doll brand that is strong, I think it's fair to say. Comprehensive might be another word you could use. We met up at the American Girl store at the Grove. It's an upscale shopping center out on the west side of L.A. And I will tell you right up front before we get going, I had no idea what I was in for.
We are here at the heart of American Girl.
Okay.
In our store.
Yes.
Looking out upon all of our historical characters.
This is like Murderer's Row here. Josephina, 1824. Addie, 1864.
It is indeed. Yeah. This is a girl's delight. So you can go into each one of these little shops and immerse yourself into that era.
That goes to what I've heard about this brand, if you will, right? It's all about the story.
It is all about the story.
Okay.
It's about characters that really help girls learn about life in different eras and compare and sort of contrast that to their own.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
But I'm not going to pay $140 to get that doll for my daughter. I'm not.
You know, what we hear from a lot of parents is that they do choose to invest in American Girl because it's not just a doll.
No, it's a whole lifestyle. And the clothes for these guys cost more than the clothes I'm wearing now, practically.
But we have, over the years, heard from girls when they're 9, when they're 10, when they're 11, they're still thinking and remembering and sharing this bond with a friend that they made.
Yeah.
They might be having social problems. They might need a confidant. So part of what we offer to girls is really a way to create a companion, someone that's safe to learn through. And for that, parents choose to invest, and I think they feel good about it because it's quality and there's just a lot of meaning behind it. But the decision is yours.
All right, yes, and thank God for that, too. Actually, that's, you know, I don't control the money in my family, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. All right, we have arrived at the down escalator.
We are headed down
to
our first floor, in which we have a bookstore. In here, we really have what we call our vitamins for girls. There's a whole range of books. This
Manners,
particular group.
Starting middle school, staying home alone, friendship troubles.
They're called Smart Girls Guides. So we encourage girls to be able to open these pages, read these pages, and get some nourishment from it. It's not just about the dolls.
Man. All right. Let's go. What else is there?
So as we come around
Style
the corner
starters.
Here.
Beach stuff, yes.
We are in a very, very exciting area called MyAG.
MyAG.
Where every little girl.
Oh, My American Girl. Sorry, I didn't get
to
it.
To choose a doll that's just right for her.
Wow.
Okay. Would you like to do that?
Well, no, because I am not buying my daughter a doll.
It's not about buying your daughter a doll. It's about experiencing what.
No, it's about buying my daughter a $110 doll. And she's going to hear this and think I'm the worst dad in the world. But anyway, give me the spiel.
So, what this brand is really all about
is
letting girls express themselves.
Okay.
Some girls are interested in creating a doll that looks like them. Some girls are interested in a certain companion, a friend that they're going to create that has opposite hair color or hair texture or color of eyes and interests. So
my daughter
is
7 years old.
Okay.
She is Chinese, and I'm not seeing a Chinese girl.
So
here.
If we head right
over
here.
Oh, look, and she is number, there she is, number.
There are several
choices. All right, I'd go with like 30 maybe.
30?
I'd go with 30.
Lovely. Every doll.
I'm not buying you this doll. You're going to hear this, and it's going to break your heart, but I'm not buying you this doll.
And there are some additional options for you to consider.
Please don't take this badly. You sound like a car salesman, but go ahead.
I love
dolls you're doing it right.
And
you're
girls
doing it right.
And the delight on their faces.
I totally get that.
So one of the things that we offer is ear piercing.
Wow, no, on a doll?
Yes, indeed. There's freckles, there's braces, there's all kinds of things. So it
That's
really
crazy.
Is about...
I mean, it's beautiful in its way, but it's crazy. Let me ask you, though, in all seriousness, why does this brand do so well? Because here we are in an economy that's basically sort of recovering. This is the very definition of disposable income spending, you know? There's a certain sector of the market you guys are going after, which I get has the disposable income. But there are a lot of choices out there for parents and their kids. How do dolls compete?
What we've created is a very uncommon set of value that comes out of the American Girl experience. And over time, this doll becomes my friend. And that friendship is really, really uncommon. Most toys don't have that kind of emotional connection. And so it does have a lasting effect on girls.
Yeah, it's interesting. You called it a toy, but I don't think you really believe that, right? It's
something
else? Yeah.
I think that the underpinnings of this brand are all about helping girls navigate through girlhood, learning how to be kind and compassionate and what it's like to overcome problems and to help others and those stories and acting it out with your doll and having your doll be your companion is part of what makes that bond so strong.
That was Jean McKenzie, the president of American Girl. We took a video crew along with us when we went. I will say only this about that. You have got to see it to believe it. It's on our website, marketplace.org.
Is it anything what you imagined?
No. Well, no.
No.
No. I did not think it was this comprehensive is the kind word. Unbelievable is the gobsmacked word. If I were a 7-year-old girl, this would be awesome. And that's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, here's a toast, the pink lemonade to that.
Yeah.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
Cannot tell you guys how amazing that American Girl thing was. You've got to see the video. All right, this final note on the way out today. In keeping with the tech-heavy theme of the broadcast today, there is a report out from Nielsen, the ratings people. Apparently a huge majority, 87% of people on Twitter, said their decision to see or not see a movie was influenced by tweets. Furthermore, 65% of people on Twitter say they follow a film-related account. That is specific movies or theater chains. I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. All right, we're done. I don't get a lot, apparently. We're done. That's Marketplace for today. John Buckley, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, George Judson, Dave Shaw, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I am Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.